First, let me give you the official biography, and then I'll tell you who Herb Silverman really is. The founder, CEO, and president of the Secular Coalition for America. Distinguished professor emeritus of mathematics at the College of Charleston. And Herb, I wish you had been my math professor. I might have gotten through differential equations. Recipient of the College of Charleston Distinguished Research Award. Founder of the Secular Humanists of the Low Country, that's in Charleston, South Carolina, where he and Sharon live. Founder and faculty advisor to the College of Charleston Student Atheist Humanist Alliance. He is a humanist celebrant. Anybody here want to get married quickly? Board member of the American Humanist Association, advisory board member of the Secular Student Alliance, and a member of the Advisory Council of Americans United for Separation of Church and State. And that is quite a resume. But now let me tell you who he really is. I know him personally as a warm, witty, actually funny guy who's full of insight and wisdom. And Herb, maybe you'll tell people about the blog that you write, because I don't remember the name of it, but every few weeks or so, he does this thing, this blog, and I get it by email. And he wants me to comment on his blog, but I can't because I agree with everything he says. And he says it with such wit and wisdom and grace. He just has a way about writing about humanism and human beings. And when he talks about that, he talks the same way. So you're going to hear him right now. Herb Silverman.
Thank you. Can you put this back? Thank you very much, Lou. I was actually disappointed by your introduction because you said too much for me to be able to live up to, but I'll do my best. And this is going to sound a little bit like a soap opera, the first part of this talk, because my story actually began in 1990, and you might wonder, why would a liberal Yankee Jewish atheist with four strikes against me decide to run for governor of South Carolina? Well, a colleague at the College of Charleston showed me our state constitution, which prohibited atheists from being governor of South Carolina. Well, I'm no constitutional scholar, but I know that Article 6 of the U.S. Constitution says that no religious tests are allowed for public office. So I went to the local ACLU, figuring I'd just point out this provision, and I say, of course, we'll get it changed. But the lawyer there said that, well, in order to have this changed, we're going to have a plaintiff, somebody willing to declare the candidacy for governor of South Carolina. So in my political naivete, I said, sure, I'll do it, figuring they just then stop right there. Well, it wasn't quite that simple. After I declared, I found out that atheist was a very sexy word, that it got in lots of newspapers nationally when the Associated Press picked up my candidacy, and one of the early calls I got about it was from a very angry woman in Philadelphia, my mother. She had read about it in the Philadelphia Inquirer, and I did have to admit that this is not the way for her to find out her only son was running for governor of South Carolina and was an atheist. So that was the first political fence I had to mend. Meanwhile, Governor Campbell in South Carolina said that the South Carolina Constitution was just fine as it was because this nation was founded on godly principles. So I knew I had a little work cut out for me. I'd be on various talk shows in South Carolina, and on one of my first shows, one of the callers said, "Well, since you're an atheist, I suppose you're free to go out and rape and murder and do whatever you think you could get away with." My response to him was, "With an attitude like that, I hope you can continue to believe in a God." So I rapidly learned that perhaps even more important than changing the state constitution was to change the hearts and minds of my fellow South Carolinians. I tried to be nice to the media, but invariably I would be introduced as a so-called atheist or an admitted atheist. I even commented, would you introduce somebody as a so-called Baptist or an admitted Catholic? there was one time they had a Meet the Candidates night in Greenville, South Carolina. That's where Bob Jones University is, where they had candidates for all the offices just giving 3-minute talks about their positions from low to the highest office, which was at the time the governor's office. And it was very enlightening hearing what some of the other candidates had to say. Like one candidate accused a different candidate of attending the wrong church because he attended a church outside of his district rather than a local church. So I was getting prepared to explain my position. And another candidate asked his wife and 2 children to stand during his 3-minute presentation. Presumably, they didn't say anything, and I guess it was just to show that he had family values. Had I known, I would have told Sharon to stand and bring our 2 cats there. But I wound up giving my positions on why atheists should be allowed to hold public office to the stares of a lot of people. And afterward, they had some tea and coffee and refreshments where people can talk to the candidates. Well, Sharon and I were on one side of the room and everyone else was pretty far away until just near the end, one guy came over to me and told me he's a principal at a local high school and said, "I'm very brave," and then quickly rushed away. So I found out that as conservative as I thought Charleston was, there were a lot more conservative places in South Carolina. I did get on a public television debate, and that was for an hour, and that was with Theo Mitchell of the Democratic Party and John Peoples of the American Party. The American Party, in case you don't remember, is the old George Wallace Party. So that says a little of where he's standing. Governor Campbell did not bother to show up for that or any of the other debates because he knew he had an easy victory. And in the debate, I talked about some issues that later came about. Like one of them, I thought that there should be a lottery for education to improve the quality of education in South Carolina. They have that now. I also said I thought we should take the Confederate flag off the state Capitol building. That was very controversial and a compromise, which I still don't like. It's off the building, but it's still prominently displayed on the grounds there. Now, after the debate, my friends said they thought that I won the debate, but that's kind of standard because I'm sure the friends of the other candidates said the same. But a year later, there was an objective way to determine who won the debate. Out of the 3 candidates in the debate a year later, I was the only one that was not in jail. The American Party was in jail for driving without a driver's license and refusing to get one, saying it's none of the government's business. The Democratic candidate was in there for more traditional reasons, tax evasion. You know, prior to that, I'd just been a math professor and had not been a public speaker. But I got kind of used to the questions that people ask, so let me give you a sampling in my answers to them. Typically, people would say, what do you think your chance of winning is? And I'd say, look, I'm an atheist, I'm not a fool. Since I knew I wasn't going to win, I felt free to be honest in my political campaign. And I even quoted Eugene V. Debs in the PBS debate by saying, it's better to vote for what you want and not get it than to vote for what you don't want and get it. Another question I'd be asked is, what would be the first thing you would do if you were elected? And I said, demand a recount. Because I had heard during the campaign, so many people would say, why are you atheists so nasty and angry about things? So at the very least, I wanted to show that we have a sense of humor too. What would make you believe in God? This was an interesting philosophical question, but I answered, maybe if I won the election. It would take that kind of a miracle. What will happen to you when you die? Well, I said, I know exactly what's going to happen to me when I die. I'm going to medical school. Just like my Jewish mother always wanted me to do. I want to use my body parts to their fullest while I'm alive, but when I'm dead, I hope others can make good use of them. And another question that people would ask would be, if the law were changed, would an atheist get elected? And I said, well, frankly, no, not in the immediate future, but 50 years ago, an African American could not get elected in South Carolina and many other states, and that has changed. And I did view this as a civil rights issue that we should be measured on our positions that we take, not on our professed religious beliefs. And I was also asked, when was the belief in the Supreme Being made a requirement? And the answer to that, which I looked up, was at the Constitutional Convention of 1868. That was actually something more progressive, because prior to that, you had to be a white Protestant landowner. But when they were debating this atheist requirement or exclusion, one delegate complained, you know, a candidate can just pretend to believe, so how can we really deal with that? The answer was, well, this requirement is meant to exclude any man, and it would have to be a man, any man so depraved as to openly deny belief in the Supreme Being. Well, that kind of fit me. And the head of the Election Commission said that he would not have questioned my beliefs if I had kept quiet about them. So my response there was, in other words, he said everything would be all right if I just lied about it. And I felt that we had enough hypocrisy with our politicians already, where some would say they believed in the tooth fairy if it would help them get elected. My friends also asked why I was wasting so much time on something so trivial. Well, I had a couple answers. First of all, I didn't know it would take as much time as it turned out taking. But I also found it appalling to be ineligible because of my religious beliefs. To challenge a law that gives credibility to religious intolerance and bigotry is not frivolous. I did have my day in court, which was the purpose of my running. It was the U.S. District Court of South Carolina. And the judge, who had recently been appointed because of a recommendation of Strom Thurmond, said that my case was not ripe. He would only rule on the merits of the case if I won the election. Well, to the surprise of no one, I lost the election. But I tend to be an optimistic person, so I look for the positives. Education is always good, and I really did get to know the Bible Belt. I didn't want to hurt atheism when I ran, and I found out that would be pretty hard to do, given the opinion that people already had about atheism. Once, I remember, I was in my dentist's office, and my dentist said, "You know, you always seem like such a nice fella. I didn't think you were an atheist." Well, one thing I learned is never argue with someone who has a drill in your mouth. But afterward, we had a conversation, and he didn't become an atheist, but at least he understood our perspective, and that's really what I wanted to do rather than try to convert people. I did, as expected, receive a number of hate mail type letters, just about always unsigned. But the surprise to me was a lot of the letters I got seemed like it was more out of ignorance than out of hate. Like they would send me a biblical passage, like, "I am the way, the truth, and the light," thinking that I would just open this and say, "Gee, I never thought of that. Okay, I'm a believer." And a lot of people wrote saying, "Well, as an atheist, you must believe in something. Do you believe in Satan?" And I had to explain that only religious people believe in Satan. We don't believe in any supernatural deities. The nice thing, though, is that I did hear from quite a number of non-believers in Charleston, and all of them said, "You know, I thought I was the only atheist here." And that inspired me, you know, when I saw how many of them there were, to try to form a community. So we got together, and that did help start our local group, the Secular Humanists of the Lowcountry. And we've grown to about 150 on our list, and we meet regularly. And we're really trying to form a sense of community. And that's what I think is important everywhere. And I'm glad to see such a nice sense of community that we have here. Now, the best thing actually for me personally is that I met Sharon during that campaign, and we've been together ever since. We actually met in church. But it was a Unitarian church, not surprisingly. The only church that would allow me to give a talk to their members. And despite our religious differences, you see, Sharon was an agnostic and I was an atheist. We still got along well. But as far as I can tell, in our history, there's never been a nonverbal war between atheists and agnostics. But since then, Sharon has become born again. She's now a full-fledged atheist. Well, with politics in my blood after running for governor, where do I go from here? Well, I decided I should try to fulfill my lifelong dream of becoming a notary public. You see, I found out that not only was I ineligible for the office of governor, but I was ineligible for any public office in South Carolina. And I knew at that point I couldn't win an election for dog catcher, but a notary public was the only public office where you don't have to actually run for election. And my lawyer felt like if I did this, this would be a much shorter campaign. Actually, it wasn't. Because in 1991, I applied for notary public, And typically, you pay a $25 fee, send in the form, and you get a letter back saying, congratulations, you're a notary public. Well, I paid the $25 fee, crossed out the so help me God part, and pointed out that our U.S. Constitution prohibits religious tests, so they would know why I was applying and that this would change our state constitution. Well, I got the application returned by the Secretary of State because I hadn't filled out the form properly. Well, then we sent this to the governor and asked him to accept or at least give reasons for not accepting, because that would be our easy court victory, we assumed. Well, the governor sent it back saying it would be too burdensome to explain why people are turned down as notary public, you know, presumably because so many people would be turned down. Well, then we got a deposition from the Secretary of State in 1994, who acknowledged that in that period of time, 33,471 people were approved as notary public, and I was the only one rejected. So it doesn't sound very burdensome. As far as I know, in the history of South Carolina, I'm the only one who was ever rejected as a notary public. We really wanted a deposition from Governor Campbell, where he would have to testify under oath. But he left office in January 1995, claiming immunity from deposition. But then we had help from an unlikely source. Our lawyer argued successfully in the circuit court that if President Clinton could be deposed by lawyers of Paula Corbin Jones, and I think you remember her, that led to the Monica Lewinsky case, then a former Governor Campbell could also be deposed. So then on March 3rd, 1995, there was an 86-page deposition from Governor Campbell. I would like to read all 86 pages of it, but there's not time. So let me do a brief excerpt of it. And for that, I'd like a volunteer from the audience to play the part of my ACLU lawyer, and I'll play Governor Campbell. You don't have to improvise. I have it written down. If there's a volunteer... You may be sorry. Okay, you read the part in bold. You'll be the ACLU lawyer.
Isn't it a fact that you have stated publicly that you do support religious qualification in the state constitution?
I have a belief in God myself. Yes, sir.
That wasn't the question. Do you support having a requirement of belief in God for public office?
I swore an oath to defend the Constitution of this state and the United States, and I will stand by swearing that oath.
Well, if the Constitution of this state conflicts with the Constitution of the United States, which one do you choose to defend?
I swore an oath to defend both of them, and unless they are mutually exclusive, then you have no conflict.
Are you aware that the U.S. Supreme Court in 1961, in an identical provision of the Maryland Constitution, ruled that it did not... that it did conflict with the First Amendment of the United States Constitution?
I have no reason to even think about that.
Is it right to deny public office to people on the basis of their religious beliefs?
I don't know that I can give you an accurate answer to that.
You can't or you won't, or you can't or you don't want to?
I said I don't know that I can.
Why can't you?
Okay, now listen carefully. Because I don't know what your religious beliefs might be. I don't want to discriminate against anybody, but would it be right to have somebody running for public office that was avowed to overthrow and destroy the United States of America, and they didn't believe in a supreme being, but they believed in a foreign government, and they call that a religion? I don't know. I've never addressed that. Neither had I. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, after that interesting deposition, an ironic twist took place because my lawyer quit my case. And this was about the same time that Paula Jones's lawyer quit her case. But my lawyer quit the entire practice of law to enter the seminary. But it wasn't what the religious right in South Carolina was praying for. He wasn't born again. He had always been active in his Unitarian church and went to Harvard Divinity School and is now a Unitarian minister in Massachusetts. We did have another ACLU lawyer take over the case and communicated with him. But then on August 2nd, 1995, a judge in the Court of Common Pleas ruled in my favor and requested the governor to act on my application within 30 days. And I knew then the times were changing because the Wall Street Journal, in their winners and losers column, had under winners, atheists. Herb Silverman denied a notary license after deleting God on the application, wins court case invalidating the South Carolina law requiring public office holders to swear a belief in a supreme being. But I was not yet a true winner. Governor Campbell resisted while in office, and it was up to Governor Beasley, who was elected in 1994 with strong Christian coalition support. He wanted creationism taught in the public schools, by the way. So the Secretary of State recommended that he, as a Christian, thought that I should be denied the notary. So, unwilling to go quietly, Governor Beasley appealed to the South Carolina Supreme Court. And a headline in the October 31st, 1995 Charleston Post and Courier read, "Governor David Beasley wants the South Carolina Supreme Court to decide if office seekers should be forced to believe in a supreme being." My response was, I understood how I could be forced to say I believe, like torture would work, but Governor Beasley did not quite clarify how I could actually be forced to believe. And my point was that this was a civil rights issue, just like Blacks and gays have no choice. I also have no choice because my reasoning abilities based on observations, experience, discussions, and readings left me with no choice. I can pretend to believe in a deity, as many politicians do, but I can't truly believe extraordinary claims without a scintilla of evidence, any more than I can change my skin color or sexual orientation. And I even asked religious people if they could will themselves to automatically stop believing, and I think they understood my perspective there. So that aside from changing our Constitution, the main point I was trying to convey is that reasonable people can disagree about whether there's a God, much like they can disagree about whether the universe is going to continue to expand or eventually start contracting. These are interesting philosophical issues, but what's important to me is how we treat each other regardless of our theological beliefs. Our dogmas should never be more important than our compassion for others. Well, the Supreme Court heard the case in October of 1996. In interviews, I couldn't resist pointing out that I was qualified to be a professor of mathematics at a public institution, but lacked the ethical and moral standards for notary public. And perhaps valuing religious indoctrination over reason and scientific inquiry might help explain the dismal condition of education in South Carolina, where we were 50th in the state of all the states in the SAT scores. Then in April of 1997, told you it was going to sound like a soap opera, with a ruling still pending, an article about the case appeared in our local paper. When asked what I thought Governor Beasley hoped to accomplish by excluding me as notary public, I said, Governor Beasley knows the U.S. Constitution prohibits religious tests for public office, and by trying to exclude non-believers, I think he's simply playing to the religious bigotry of a segment of his constituency. Governor Beasley's press secretary responded that the governor denies in the strongest terms that he is a religious bigot and thinks it's a shame that Silverman would attack the governor's religious beliefs like that. Apparently, Governor Beasley couldn't distinguish between being called a religious bigot and a political panderer, which he was. He reacted as if I were trying to prevent Christians from holding public office. Well, then on May 27th, 1997, the South Carolina Supreme Court unanimously agreed that the South Carolina Constitution violates the Religious Test Clause of the U.S. Constitution. Ironically, I shared top billing the next day with a person whose lawsuit paved the way for our deposing Governor Campbell. Two side-by-side headlines in the Charleston Post and Courier were, Atheist wins fight against God clause, and the High Court says Jones is clear to sue Clinton. My picture appeared next to Paula's. It was easy to tell us apart. Which, if you want to see, I'll pass it around and get the picture for you to look at. But now, Governor Beasley had a tough call. He didn't want to be the first governor of South Carolina to grant a notary commission to an acknowledged atheist. But on the other hand, he was reluctant to appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court for a couple of reasons. First, there was a states' rights argument that all along their lawyers said that he was sworn to uphold the state constitution without regard to previous U.S. Supreme Court decisions. So how could he then ask the federal government to interfere with the unanimous decision of the highest court in the sovereign state of South Carolina? But also, some conservatives were concerned about wasting taxpayer money on this case, as they had recently done when women were admitted into the Citadel. That was a major court case, and also the posting of the Ten Commandments in Charleston City Council. And state officials didn't want to be criticized for wasting even more taxpayer money on what would obviously be another costly and fruitless appeal of my case. They'd already spent close to $100,000 trying to keep me from becoming a notary public. And South Carolina is not your wealthiest state. So finally, on August 8th, 1997, Governor Beasley granted me my notary commission. So Sharon and I were very excited. We went to the county clerk to pick up my notary commission, and Sharon took pictures of me holding the notary commission above my head and shaking hands with the person giving me my notary. Now, I don't know what your definition of a loser is, but the people in that office knew nothing about my case, and they thought, like, the high point of my life is becoming a notary public. Well, I'm open for business now as a notary public with a sign prominently displayed in my campus office. And incidentally, I've performed so far 12 weddings as notary public or humanist celebrant, and a very unusual occurrence of the 12 weddings, as far as I know now, none have ended in divorce. So that's very odd. Yeah, one of my students at the College of Charleston, who was unfamiliar with my case, saw my notary sign and asked if I had to go to law school to become a notary. I told him it wasn't quite that simple. course. Law school would have only taken 3 years. It took longer to get my notary commission than to get my PhD in mathematics. Now, my right to become a notary public should not have taken 7 years or happened the way it did, but it was well worth the wait. And now I want to say to people here, if you want to get married, or you have children or grandchildren who want to get married, you are invited to come to Charleston, South Carolina. I'll perform the ceremony free. Sharon and I have an extra bedroom, and that can be the honeymoon suite. Now, none of the political leaders in my state, and certainly not the lawyers advising them, believed they could prevail legally if I continued to pursue my notary case. Yet these same politicians would rather waste time and money on a lost cause rather than risk the wrath and lose the votes of a well-organized religious right. Well, after this incident, I became what was probably an accidental atheist activist for what I came to view as an important movement for secularists in our country. That also seemed to be heading toward a creeping theocracy, at least based on what I saw in South Carolina. Previously, I'd just been an apathetic atheist, like most are. I know many of you are already active, and I thank you for that. There are lots of things each of you can do, locally or nationally, according to your comfort level and financial means. In general terms, I think our goal should be to become part of mainstream America without compromising our principles. We must integrate ourselves into society while identifying ourselves as humanists and atheists in a non-confrontational way. So in 2002, we formed the Secular Coalition for America, which initially had 4 national non-theistic organizations and has grown to 10 organizations, which cover the full spectrum of free thought. And we have a brochure here with the information and the organizations. There are copies at the back that if you haven't already picked up, I hope you will. And to go to our website at secular.org, an easy one to remember, and sign up for our action alerts as well. Now, in terms of the Secular Coalition, because I'm often asked, let me first tell you what we don't do. We don't argue about words. People in our coalition for years have been doing that because they call themselves humanists, atheists, free thinkers, agnostic, whatever. We feel whatever you want to call yourselves, that's fine, but let's not try to convert others into their terminology. But here's what we do. We cooperate on the 95% we have in common rather than bicker on the 5% that might set us apart. All our member organizations have strict limits on lobbying. So the Secular Coalition Incorporated as a political advocacy group to allow unlimited lobbying on behalf of secular Americans. Our mission is to increase the visibility of and respect for non-theistic viewpoints and to protect and strengthen the secular character of our government. For too long, our non-theistic community has been considered politically inconsequential. There are over 50 million such Americans, and we advocate for those millions who choose to live without theistic beliefs. The Secular Coalition sometimes collaborates with organizations that are neither theistic nor non-theistic, like the ACLU and Americans United for Separation of Church and State. We also cooperate on selected issues with theistic organizations, like the Interfaith Alliance and the Baptist Joint Committee for Religious Liberty. working with diverse groups provides the additional benefit of gaining more visibility and respect for our unique perspectives. The Secular Coalition hopes not only to influence legislation, but to win the larger cultural war. Improving the public perception of secular Americans may be as important to some of us as pursuing a particular political agenda. Politicians think they are being tolerant when they express support for all faiths. Instead, we hope to hear them express support for all faiths and none, for freedom of conscience for all people. In 2007, the coalition held a contest to find the highest elected official without God beliefs. And Representative Pete Stark, a Democrat from South Carolina, Carolina's on my brain. It wouldn't have happened in South Carolina. A Democrat from California became the first member in the history of Congress to acknowledge being an atheist. And he won't be the last. We know, in fact, there are at least 27 others who prefer remaining in the closet, and we're hoping to pave the way for them to also come out. Last year, a landmark day for the Secular Coalition was a meeting with White House officials to talk about issues of concern to secular Americans. This was the first time a presidential administration met for a policy briefing with the humanist and atheist community. When word got out about the White House meeting, the Secular Coalition became important enough for some in the media to grossly distort our message. For instance, Sean Hannity claimed on Fox News that the Obama administration gave special treatment to atheists that religious groups don't receive. One organization, known as In God We Trust, called us one of the most hate-filled groups in the country. And Catholic League President Bill Donahue said representatives of the Secular Coalition were some of the biggest anti-religious zealots in the nation who want to crush Christianity. Well, the issues we actually discussed with White House officials were childhood medical neglect and abuse, military proselytizing and coercion, and fixing faith-based initiatives. Religious extremists may inaccurately report our activities and goals, but at least they're paying attention to us. Our community is becoming more visible, and I'm optimistic by continuing to work together, we will gain more respect for our secular perspectives. Now, the Secular Coalition began with just volunteers, and we've grown to a full-time staff of 6. Not nearly enough to equal the number of lobbyists representing powerful forces in the religious right, but at least a good start. We want politicians to learn that humanists and atheists are decent and patriotic Americans who are politically aware and vote. We need to show that the religious right has no right to claim a monopoly on ethics and values. As good as our lobbyists are in presenting our issues to members of Congress, we would be even more successful if we could walk in and say something like, "Here are the names of 82 people in your district who signed up for our action alerts, and they will be watching carefully how you vote on our issues. So please sign up and let your member of Congress know." Here are some of the recent activities of the Secular Coalition. In May, more than 100 supporters from around the country descended on Capitol Hill to lobby their members of Congress on important issues facing secular Americans. Since then, our staff has spent hundreds of hours directly lobbying Congress and the Obama administration to protect the right of secular Americans from the imposition of religious dogma on public policy, and you'd be surprised how much there is. From an attempt in Mississippi to redefine life as beginning at conception, to a congressional measure reaffirming the divisive "In God We Trust" as our national motto, religious groups have been taking every opportunity to use religion to supplant science, reason, and the Constitution. Presidential candidates are going out of their way to appeal to religious extremism and to undermine the secular foundation of our Constitution. Four candidates have claimed that God told them to run for president. The Secular Coalition is going to hold these candidates and all politicians accountable for their statements and, more importantly, for their actions. In 2012, we plan to release our first presidential scorecard to ensure that voters know where the candidates stand on the issues that matter to us. In addition, we'll release a comprehensive scorecard for all 535 members of the 112th Congress. We will also be holding a major lobbying initiative the day before a National Reason rally in Washington, D.C. on March 24th, 2012, where we expect thousands of people to show up. The Secular Coalition staff will be training hundreds of secular Americans like you on the basics of lobbying before then heading to Capitol Hill to meet with your member of Congress if you sign up to do so. And I hope many of you will and can attend this Reason rally. You can check these details on our website at secular.org, as well as looking at our Secular Decade plan. Now, I must say, I'm honored to be president of the Secular Coalition. The only thing about the position that I dislike is the much-needed fundraising. The religious right has multi-million set aside for lobbying and publicity. We are operating on a relative shoestring. So I hope you will check our website, secular.org, and sign up for our action alerts, and also consider contributing to our cause. You can contribute online, or you can talk to me afterward. And I thank you all for listening.
Well, thank you very much.
And now for my favorite part, and that's the Q&A.
For questions, we have one microphone here and one over there. Please use the microphone and start by stating what your name is. Thank you.
Yeah, hi, my name is Marie. I have a question. You talk about the religious right and the dichotomy of that and the atheists and secularists. Comment on the religious left, if that's not a contradiction in terms, and whether you get any support from the religious left, I guess.
Yeah, I don't think at all it's a contradiction of terms. And it depends on what the religious left is saying. If it's talking about the importance of human values, separation of church and state, then we're with them completely, and we lobby with them. Sometimes I have a concern with the religious left on issues that we support, or I personally support, like feeding the poor and not going to war. But when they use, and gays and lesbians should be treated equally, well, but what they often do is give selected quotes from the Bible to support their position, but then the religious right counters. And I think the religious right actually has a better position if all we're going to do is go to the Bible to see what they say about homosexuality or women's rights. So I'm more comfortable saying, look, this is 2,000 years later. We have a lot more evidence about how our culture works. So let's do what we understand to be reasonable things rather than quote from ancient holy texts?
Herb, of interest to this, I'm Lou Altman, I'm a member of this church. Of interest to this group, could you mention the fact that the Hugh Humanists may very well be the next group to join the secular coalition?
No, I won't, because you just did. Yeah, in January, the board meets, and as the brochure says, that we have 10 national non-theistic organizations. We, in January, quite possibly, will have 11, because the Hugh Humanists, that's Humanist Unitarians, and I don't know if you're a chapter here or not, or they're planning to get chapters. Oh, okay, great. Well, I hope in January you also will be formally an organization in the secular coalition, even though before that you're perfectly able to support the Secular Coalition for America to whatever capacity you're comfortable with. One of our fundraisers is good, I don't know, Woody Kaplan, not me, he has a phrase that I like. Give till you feel good. And that actually works for a lot of people who feel good by giving more than they had in the past to this and other worthwhile organizations.
My name is June, and I'm curious. when you ran for governorship, how many actual votes were cast and how many did you actually receive?
Well, not surprisingly, I did not get any major party endorsements, so I ran as a write-in candidate. And it was kind of difficult to determine because in some districts, the write-in candidates were all lumped together. So I was there with Donald Duck and Porky Pig and the like. And I even had trouble voting for myself because I didn't have a pen with me. And so I had to borrow from somebody else without telling them why. But I got somewhere between, officially, 300 to 400 votes. But if I ran today, I think I'd get at least four figures worth because things are changing. People hadn't heard of atheist or humanist organizations. Now they do. So it's a gradual process, but I think we're winning. The non-theists are, percentage-wise, growing more than any of the religious groups are.
Thank you. David Williamson of the Local Atheists of Florida chapter. And I wanted to argue with you about words for just a minute. What do you think about the, and I've heard some great arguments for and against the use of the word atheist, and I think the connotation is the problem, not the definition. What do you think about that, and what has been your perspective in discussions in the last 20 years on the subject? I'm sure it's come up.
Actually, it hasn't stopped for 20 years. It's just minimized. I think there are two good arguments. The argument for atheism is it gets publicity. It's a sexy word. And we really do want media attention. The more media attention where we can give our perspective, the better. The argument for humanists is people like the word. And I like the word. I call myself atheist, humanist, agnostic, whatever. I'm comfortable with those words. The problem with humanists is people don't know what it means. Like the American Humanist Association has specific definition, and that's a non-theist. But the Pope calls himself a humanist too, and our theology is quite a bit different. I think the elevator definition is good without God, and I think atheists and humanists share that view. So that's why I said I prefer discussing things we have in common and working toward a common goal. And privately, it could be fun to see, just like I mentioned, like Sharon and I arguing about agnostic versus atheist, which to call ourselves. That can be an interesting, fun topic to talk about. But for the public to get action, I think we need to be united on what we have in common. Because whatever we call ourselves, our beliefs are essentially the same. So when I hear atheist denigrating humanists or humanist denigrating atheists, that's where I want to spring into action. Even people who denigrate religious people with a blanket statement, that's wrong, because there are strong religious supporters for us, and I mean, I'm talking to Unitarians here, you know, and whether people belong to church or not, I don't care, but as long as they share our views on the important issues, we need to work together. Just like the Christian Coalition worked together, took over school boards, and they were very successful in everything that most of us dislike, and we want to be successful copying, to some extent, their organizing and fundraising abilities and getting media attention to get our point of view out.
I'm Lisa from UU. Hello, are you there? Yes, okay. I'm Lisa from UU, and my curiosity is what the issues are that the Lowcountry organization is essentially focused on. Because when I think about local issues, I think of school board, school board, school board, and I'm wondering what other things you deal with.
There is a lot of school board. There's also prayer in some public schools that they know they're not supposed to, so we're kind of a watchdog for that. There have been, like, posting the Ten Commandments. And what our local group got, fortunately, I don't think it's yet happened in South Carolina, God We Trust license plates. In South Carolina, people can get that for the same rate as they get the regular license plates, because the legislature passed that. So our secular humanists of the Lowcountry sponsored In Reason We Trust license tags. That it was difficult getting it through, but if they didn't allow it, we would promote the fact that South Carolina trusts in God, but not in reason. So a lot of this is trying to get media attention for our existence, rather than we're not strong enough to change public policy. But we work with Americans United, our ACLU, on issues where there are clear violations that aren't stopped. We also had a billboard, Don't Believe in God, You Are Not Alone. And that was the first billboard in the South for that perspective. And that created a lot of tension, gave us a lot of new members. And Laurie Goodstein, a reporter from the New York Times, came down to South Carolina to interview us. And she had a really nice article in the New York Times. It was the second most read one the week that appeared. And it talked about the Secular Coalition and the Secular Humanists of the Lowcountry and atheists in general. The gist of it was, if it could happen in South Carolina, it can happen anywhere. And so I think a good thing for local groups to do is look for ways to get publicity so that people will know we exist. That, coming out of the closet, was the best way gays and lesbians got their message out, that they're decent people, that your friends and neighbors and even family members might be gay or atheist without knowing. It's easier to hide atheist, humanist views because for a lot of people, we're just apathetic about, I don't believe in God. Well, I also don't believe the earth is flat, but I don't go around talking about it all the time. Even though there is a round earth society, we're not fighting them. If they took over school boards, then there's a flat earth society. And if they took over school boards, we'd fight them. But most people just laugh at them, and that's what I wish people would do with the religious right. But unfortunately, we're nowhere near there, but we're moving slightly in that direction.
If you were called to be a witness in a court and you had to take the oath, so help me God, what would happen?
Well, I would not have to take the oath, so help me God, nor does anyone. That's become a tradition of a lot of people. You know, putting your hand on the Bible and swearing an oath to God, as presidents usually do. Not all presidents have done that, but that's not a requirement at all. So I just wouldn't do it. And if they challenge me on that, then what do you do with a challenge? You look at the Constitution. I would say I'll tell the whole truth. I would put my hand on Richard Dawkins' The God Delusion if they wanted me to put my hand on a book. But the important thing is to tell the truth in court, which is what I would do, and I would make a case for that. Yeah. Yeah. Well, in fact, that's the requirement. Our U.S. Constitution says for the president that I swear or affirm. You don't have to swear. Now, it depends on what you mean by swear. Like, for instance, Quakers will not swear, but they will affirm. I've been known to swear, but not to God.
Lots of big names on it. Richard Dawkins is on the advisory board, Sam Harris, Christopher Hitchens. How have these individuals helped the cause for your organization?
Well, to a different extent. For instance, Salman Rushdie is also on our board, but he might not even remember that he's on our board. But you know, he supports our goals, and he agreed to do it. Richard Dawkins has been terrific. The Richard Dawkins Foundation helps contribute to the Secular Coalition. We cooperate on many issues. He'll publicize the Secular Coalition whenever he can, and he speaks to many of our organizations, the American Humanist Association, American Atheists. He's willing to put himself out a great deal. And he wrote a nice foreword to my book that will be coming out in January. Some of you may have seen the brochures for that. But he's a terrific person. And Sam Harris has contributed. And when asked for their expertise on something or to make a statement, they'll be happy to do so. But as you can see, they're all much more distinguished than people like me or our other board members. And they're very busy people, too, but they support the aims of the Secular Coalition and are willing to help.
No more questions. Before we go, I just wanted to mention, if you enjoyed today's talk, you may be interested. There's a terrific video on YouTube of Herb at his retirement party at the College of Charleston. Very warm, very funny, and I think you'd enjoy looking at it. Well, Herb, thank you very much again. We really enjoyed it.
Thank you.